scrambles left, winds up right behind. He's got time at the 10 to the 5. Yes! To the end zone. Touchdown. Darren Sproles gone. Touchdown. Eagles.
This is the Root NY Podcast, talking all things NFL. Now here's your hosts, Root NY.
Hello and welcome to part two of the Woot NY show. I'm Josh Y and I'm joined by Scott Langford, who is here.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
So he won't get fined. Am I correct?
I'm just a little disappointed I'm not in the opening bit so far. It says here is Woot NY, but there's no Woot to be seen. Where's Scott and Y?
Scott and Y? Well, buddy, hold on. If there's no Woot, I at least get first naming rights. At least.
Why?
Just why? Question mark.
Exactly.
Why question mark? You'll have to ask Tristan, who made our intro. You can follow him at Reject Kai. He does a fantastic job. Does our outro, which you will hear at the end of this episode, because it is part two of our episode. We just finished recording part one, and look, I'm a little bit angry.
You have reason to be angry. That was atrocious.
I am furious, moment. And I'm struggling.
Oh my god. Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
I'm so angry. What's the procedure? Because my neighbour decided to mow his friggin' lawn at 7:30 at night next to my state-of-the-art studio here. And for some reason just shot through our soundproofing. And for about 20 minutes of part one, you're going to hear lawn mowing. So, you know, it's just... it's infuriating, especially when we're building for... some sort of game. There's some big game on this Monday that I'm not sure. Maybe I might ask Buzz what the game is on Monday. But I want you guys to tweet. You're going to tweet us about the Super Bowl and our picks and have a go at us for whatnot. But I want you guys to tell us your neighbor horror stories, because right now that's the most annoying thing my neighbor's ever done. Which, to be fair, he's only been my neighbor for like 6 months, so the ones before them were far worse. So tweet us, I don't know, hashtag NeighborGate. Does that sound like a... Has that got a nice ring to it?
NeighborGate could work.
Yeah.
I think the gate is sort of overdone a lot of things, but...
Yeah, but between myself and a neighbour is historically a fence or a gate. Why don't we call it Neighbour Fence?
Neighbour Fence doesn't have a ring to it. Neighbor Ghazi?
Maybe we're overreacting. Maybe we should just chillax.
This isn't ISIS. This isn't... No one's dying.
Thanks, Tom. You know how to warm my heart, Tom.
He does. That was well said, Tom. Well said.
Well done, Tom. Although, how do we know that my neighbour is not a member of ISIS?
That's not something we can just assume.
So I've just jumped 3 months and just gone with our bold predictions for next year already.
Yes.
Ooh, saucy. All right, before we hit some Super Bowl analysis... And when I mean analysis, we're going to discuss at length what colour Katy Perry's dress will be. Let's get to the weird web story.
You gotta get out of here. This is crazy. You're so weird.
No. You're really weird.
You're so weird.
Alright, I've got a bonus. We've got two weird web stories this week. We're trying to double our weird web stories because we will never beat the Gronking to Remember episode. I think the podcast peaked way too early in 2015. So the first one we'll start with, and then the second one's got a Super Bowl ring to it, so that'll lead us into our Super Bowl preview. This one is from Deadspin, our trusty allies at Deadspin. This one is Jay Cutler is One Fed Up Dad, and it's by Tom Lay. Basically, Kristen Cavallari of... What show was she on?
That was The Hills, was she not on, maybe?
The Hills.
I can't say that I'm a massive fan of MTV shows, but I'm pretty sure it was The Hills.
Okay, we'll go with The Hills. She is obviously married to Jay Cutler, and they have a couple of cutlets together. And she posted an Instagram screenshot of text messaging who she calls JC. So it could be Jay Cutler or it could be JC Penny. But she says the eagle has landed, so I assume she's the eagle, and for what she says, she's returned home from LA. He said, "Need you home ASAP. All hell has broken loose." Jax is in his crib. Cam refuses to eat. I'm about to leave. And then she replies, what the... So, it seems like Jay Cutler can't win off the field either. Despite marrying... would you call her a celebrity?
I would call her a celebrity, but I do want to apologise to all Laguna Beach fans out there because that's the show that she was on, not the Hills.
Oh, God. What is that? What's the difference?
I'm not quite sure. It's that same mind-numbingly dumb MTV show that Teen Hatters seem to like. But, hey, she's famous and she's been on the league and there's a Cutler baby and the Cutler baby is misbehaving. So,
yeah,
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, Tom Lay writes, I've always wondered exactly what kind of dad surly ass Jay Cutler is. Thanks to his Instagram post from his wife, Kristen Cavalieri, I now have an answer. He's exactly the kind of dad I expected him to be. The best part of that exchange is I'm about to leave. Just imagine Jay Cutler dropping an open jar of baby food and spoon on the crib, sucking a juice box in the other kid's mouth and dipping it out. You little are on your own. Daddy's gone to the titty bar. So Tom Lay's not holding back. For me, some of the best things on Deadspin are always the comments. There's a whole heap of comedians on Deadspin. Comment one from, I'm not going to name the username, despite the obvious deficiency in Cutler's performance, Cavalieri has decided to renew their vows.
That's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. But...
I like that. That's a little, you know, referring to, you know, it's like a metaphor from Cavalieri is the Chicago Bears management. Comment two is, Jay would be a lot more popular if he quit the NFL and started a YouTube channel where he just throws full bottles of milk 50 yards directly into the back of a child's head.
It's still missed, so I don't know if I'm
going to do it. Yes. One of the kids would intercept it from...
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to be harsh on Jay Cutler. But I find it funny that even off the field, Jay Cutler's still losing to Jax, or Jacksonville, one of his kids' names. So he still can't beat Jacksonville off the field. That's my take on that one. All right, and our second weird web story is a Facebook picture cost man... Super Bowl XLIX credentials by Kyle Newport from Bleacher Report. So I'm just going to read this one out. It's quite brief. Working at the Super Bowl was a dream job for Russ Knight, so when he found out that he was going to be in the press box for this year's big game, he wanted to share the good news. However, a Facebook post cost him his dream job, as CBS's Five's Jason Barry reported. So Knight used Facebook to show off his credentials to his friends. He was clearly excited to be living the dream, but the picture was a no-no. So according to security purposes, the NFL prohibits employees from posting pictures with their credentials in the shop. It's on the fine print on the back of the credentials. Anyone who breaks the rule will be stripped of their credentials. So instead of working at the game, Knight will now be watching at home, all because of a Facebook post. Given that he can only blame himself, this will probably eat him for a while. Thoughts on that one?
That's just down to very poor luck. Obviously, the NFL's got to be stringent with this sort of thing. Obviously, the reason why you can't take a photo on social media is to avoid all those fake passes that might go around. But at the same time, if you were giving a media pass, you'd probably want to brush up on all the different policies that are out there that might incur a suspension of that pass. So, poor form by this fella not to realise that he was doing a bit of a no-no there.
Terrible form. And Can't win all, you know. You just got to cop it on the chin, and you know, face up to the facts. But I just want to know: has Facebook ever cost you a job opportunity not a job opportunity? Just has Facebook ever, you know, stopped you from doing something? Have you ever embarrassed yourself way too much on Facebook? Let us know. Maybe it's to do with your neighbor. If you could merge it with what did we end up calling that neighbor?
Neighbor Gate or Neighbor Ghazi or...
Yeah, something neighbor. Just hashtag... Or go Neighbor Gate. And maybe you can mix the two together. And that's our weird web story. And now it's time to get into the Super Bowl. Alright, so Super Bowl 49. If you've been living under a rock or just listening to Bill Belichick's press conferences for way too long, you would know that... The Super Bowl itself is the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. Let's just talk about the match itself, and then we'll get into some key battles and bowl predictions. Your opening thoughts on the game.
Well, I dubbed this the hashtag bandwagon bowl a couple of weeks ago. Yes. I think you guys picked up on it as well.
Yep.
this is obviously for all the Australian fans out there, and I realise there are plenty of legitimate Australian NFL fans out there who follow the Patriots or the Seahawks or anyone else for that matter, but I would dare say that a majority of the people watching next Monday morning will be jumping on the bandwagon of one of those two teams. They are the two biggest bandwagon teams in Australia, it would seem, especially the Patriots. So it'll be interesting to see which team comes out ahead, not only on the field, but on the bandwagon front as well.
Yeah, I said on ABC Radio that it was also the bandwagon bowl, and I said to Dave Barron, a mini episode last week, that this was definitely, I reckon, accounts for 80% of NFL fans in Australia. And maybe it's a bit over, you know, maybe it's a little bit high, maybe not.
Maybe there's way too many buzzers out there. Might have to do more than just an ask buzz. It's ask any NFL fan.
Oh, I've seen some. I have a feeling that my neighbour who was mowing the lawn at 7:30 during our podcast had a Russell Wilson jersey on and a Patriots hat on.
There's a decent possibility of it.
Yeah, I associate that person. Oh, actually, sorry. I'm going to give him. He had an Aaron Dobson jersey on from Rebel Sport.
I still can't believe I saw that. I was up in Sydney, as I said, over Christmas and went into Rebel Sport, and I'm still shaken by the fact that there's Dobson jerseys at Rebel Sport in Sydney. That's just, I don't know what's going on up in your side of the woods, but that's ridiculous.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, are you kidding me?
Come on, you gotta be kidding me.
It's ridiculous. Let's move on. Just some news coming out of the sort of, apart from Media Day and Borghazi, the health of Earl Thomas, he practiced in full today, so did Richard Sherman and Marshawn Lynch, so all systems go there. I think Brian Stork also is sort of probable to play. Is that your understanding?
I think most people who have got a few little niggles are probable to play.
Yep.
I even saw this morning that Tom Brady's battling the sniffles. Let's hope that he's not going to sit out the Super Bowl. Otherwise, Jimmy Garoppolo better be ready to go, because who knows how bad a runny nose could get.
But... Bold prediction.
You never know.
Tom Brady slips on his runny nose. Concussion. Jimmy Garoppolo just walks out into the Super Bowl and tears a 40-burger against the Seattle defense. And Jimmy G becomes the new Boston hero and sending Tom Brady back to his home in Wisconsin to fade away into the wilderness.
Yeah, I think injuries around the Super Bowl, especially with people like Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, who are quite proud of themselves, they're not going to miss a game over a small little niggle. Even if they were to do some long-term damage, I think it would be worth it to have a Super Bowl ring, or at least a second one. So wouldn't really put too much currency on those guys missing anything.
I know I was being completely stupid just a minute ago, but say Tom Brady did, you know, break his arm tomorrow and wins a ring as a backup. Does that ring count towards his legacy? Well, as a back, like if you don't actually play in the game, what does that say?
Well, it's always interesting. People always ask what the etiquette is around who wins a ring. For instance, last year did Jesse the Monster actually win one or not? Yeah. But I mean, if you're on the squad, even if it's just the reserve team, look, you're part of it. In that instance, I think you would count that towards Tom Brady's legacy, but certainly I would also pencil that down as the start of the Jimmy Garoppolo era in Boston, as you said. It'd be an interesting thing if that did happen.
Yeah, I know I was just playing around, but like it just sort of brought up a serious question where I thought, well, what would happen? You know, like, you know, first play, if he gets concussed and the Patriots go on to win with Jimmy G, well, you know, does Tom Brady technically have four rings, or is it 3.5? You
know? Oh, I mean, if you start 18 games and get all the way through 18 and then falter at the last hurdle, then I think, like, you'll give him one because otherwise Giselle might have some choice words for the media after.
He can't concuss himself, you know.
Anyway, I think it's time to move on to the next thing.
Yes, absolutely. I'm losing it. The neighbour has really gotten to me, buddy. It's really gotten to me. This game, I think, before we get into the key battles as well, I think Brandon Brown's knowledge of Seattle and Pete Carroll could be crucial and gives them an obvious advantage than, say, what Denver had last year going in to the Super Bowl, and the fact that the game is now sort of not out in the elements as well, which might help Brady on his deep passes.
Yeah, it's always interesting. After every season, you see the Super Bowl-winning team sort of get picked apart because teams sort of want to have that intel on the good teams. And obviously when you're playing against your former team in the Super Bowl, that just, you know, sort of amplifies a lot more. You even saw Brown during media day say that he knows all the weaknesses of guys like Doug Baldwin and Javon Kearse and all those sort of guys. So it'll be interesting to see how much of an impact that has, whether or not he's a non-factor or if he can actually get inside the Seattle receivers' heads and beat them at their own game.
Yeah, absolutely. And he even said that he's told Patriots teammates to break Sherman's arm and stomp on ankles. And yeah, he's not a nice man. He's not a nice
I think man. He's well and truly outside of his Seattle days. I think he's now firmly a Patriot. And
yep.
I don't think he's made any new friends in Seattle if he hadn't any to begin with.
Yes, correct. All right, we'll move on to some key matchups that I think we will agree will ultimately decide who comes out on top. Although me and Woot discussed a lot of different matchups at length last year, and ultimately it sort of fell flat on its face because some facets of the game, it just completely went out the window because of the fumble to start the game and the safety, and it just went crazy. But the Broncos' offensive line was the weakest thing in that Super Bowl, and it cost them the game. So in this one, I think this Patriots offensive line, especially Nate Solder and Sebastian Vollmer against Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril, will play an important role in the outcome of the Super Bowl, because we know if you can get pressure on Brady, he sort of melts a little bit. But even the thought of pressure and the shadows there lurking around him, he sort of rushes his strides a little bit and overthrows receivers. Your thoughts on that matchup?
It'll definitely be an interesting one. I mean, I was having to sort of think about it during the week, and on those lines of what you're talking about with last year's Super Bowl, I was kind of wondering, would you even count last year's Super Bowl as Super Bowl experience for the Seahawks, considering how much of a romp it was?
Mm.
You know, if they get a little bit of pressure on them, and I mean, obviously they're big game tested, but I think when you've got the game wrapped up by halftime, and half the Super Bowl last year was sort of a bit of a fun fest for the Seahawks players.
That's
this
true.
Time around, when you've got a matchup, but specifically that Solder and Vollmer versus Bennett and Averill, I mean, that's a fantastic pass rush against two guys who are fantastic pass rush defenders. So that's going to be a massive battle, because whatever space that Tom Brady has, he's obviously going to make a huge difference to how much he can utilize his receivers, and it'll certainly dictate how much of an impact the Legion of Boom have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key, though, I think Solder's a little bit weaker on the pass protection than Vollmer. So if they can exploit Nate Solder, he might sort of affect the pressure in the game. I think he knows this, and I think Nate Solder will have to have a huge, huge game. And what you said about the Seahawks not having big game experience, I think they've played two really, really nail-biting back-to-back championship games against San Francisco. That was a nail-biter. And then against Green Bay, I guess it sort of was the opposite of the Super Bowl, where the first half was really average and then the second half they turned it on. So I think I don't think it'll faze them, but I completely understand where you're coming from. Another key battle, you mentioned the Legion of Boom. How they match up against Gronkowski this season, especially the Seattle Seahawks have been a little bit prone to giving up touchdowns to tight ends. I'll just have a look here. The Seahawks, yeah, have 11 touchdowns. Their opposing quarterbacks have 11 touchdowns and 2 interceptions when targeting tight ends.
Which is kind of weird, because in terms of passing yardage and receptions, they're actually quite good at defending the tight end.
It's just in the red zone.
So obviously when you're putting the chips down, the tight end obviously steps up. And obviously in the red zone, the tight end, especially a guy like Gronk, can be a massive impact. So
yes,
we may well see that around the ground, the guys like Amendola and Edelman and LaFell will get a lot of the touches. But when the chips are down in the red zone, it's going to be very difficult to be physical with Gronk. I know that Sherman and the Legion of Boom like to be physical, but Gronk's not exactly a pushover. So that'll be really interesting to see how they match up.
Yeah, for me, the one thing that stands out on tape is that no matter where Gronkowski lines up, the teams that disrupted him, either at the line of scrimmage or within 5 yards of the release, had the most success. And the Jets did this quite well, but if you don't do it well, we know what Gronk's like, and he is a bad, bad man, and if he gets a free run off the line and he's got a very quick first step, bad things can happen. But the Jets, as I said, they've Rex Ryan, especially, I'm sure Pete Carroll's probably spoken to Rex Ryan. The Jets have had a... Because, you know, we know Rex Ryan hates the Patriots. He respects them, but he dislikes them. The Jets, in week 16, Gronk was targeted 10 times, and then he finished with 6 receptions for 31 yards. And his lowest yards per catch of the season, 5.2. And that was late on the season, so I'm sure Seattle have watched that game plan, and I think Cam Chancellor is going to be very physical with Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, definitely. And going back to a couple of years ago, which was the only real game between the Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks you got to go off of, which was the You Mad Bro game.
You Mad Bro?
New England tight ends, which is Gronk, Fells, and the man in the orange jumpsuit now, Aaron Hernandez, they went for what was 13 receptions and 120-odd yards. So, obviously, New England a couple of years ago definitely utilised those three tight ends. Obviously, Gronk hasn't got those other tight ends behind him this year, but Gronk could probably do that by himself.
Yeah, well, Gronk didn't play in that game.
Or Gronk was there.
Sorry, he wasn't 100% healthy.
No.
Yes, that's the talk this week. I apologise. And definitely, Aaron Hernandez is a lot different style of play to Rob Gronkowski. But I think he's the best player on the field in the Super Bowl, and if he shows up, I think the game will be over. I think he can change a game on its head. He is that good. And it's funny, someone so childish and immature is so composed and so good on the field. It's crazy.
Yeah, the tight ends haven't really had too much success this year. I think the only tight end who did much against the Seahawks this year was Antonio Gates.
Yeah.
Who I think he had two or three touchdowns in that game.
Yeah, he had three touchdowns in that game, so it sort of inflates that stat a little bit.
But I think they were all short red zone touchdowns as well. I think one was, just looking at it here, 2 8-yard passes and a 21-yard pass. Yeah, so obviously they're in the red zone against a tight end. Obviously Gronk at this stage of his career, or right now versus Antonio Gates, you'd take Gronk 10 times out of 10, so... It'd be interesting to see what happens. That's obviously the key matchup going into the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Some other matchups, especially, we'll flip it around. I think it's Marshawn Lynch versus the Patriots' run defense. The Patriots' run defense early on in the year was not the best, but they've turned it around late in the season.
Well, they've got a pretty big guy blocked in the middle there, in Big Wilfork. So he's obviously going to be able to plug it in. And I mean, their defensive tackles aren't exactly guys that you write home about. I think they've got Alan Branch in there every now and then.
And Silver Saliga or something?
Saliga in there. Obviously, guys like Chandler Jones and Collins and Hightower are going to do a bit more of the grunt work. But certainly, if you've got Vince Wilfork in the middle there, it's going to create a little bit of a disturbance. But Marshawn Lynch is just one of those players, one of those running backs that, no matter who you have there, he has that really weird step. It's almost like a stop step where he, if Sean McCoy has his little juke, then, you know, Marshawn Lynch's little step that he has, which sort of, it's a difference between, you know, stopping the running back in a 50-yard run. It'll be interesting.
This man is a beast.
He's an absolute beast. And you mentioned Jamie Collins there and Vince Wilfork. Vince Wilfork's my favourite Patriot of all time. I love him so much. I think he's fantastic. We saw him save a woman. He turned the car over or something on the way home from the AFC Championship game, pulled a woman out of a car crash.
And he just did it nonchalantly. He's like, yep, give me a hand. And
just hopped back in his car and went home and probably had a big plate of ribs and some, you know, cookies and milk and went to sleep.
He's one of the only remaining Super Bowl 39 Patriot winning players as well. So he's looking for his second.
But a player like Jamie Collins might replace him eventually as my favourite Patriot. I think Jamie Collins is fantastic. I thought he was very impressive in the media day. Very quiet, humble fellow. I guess we don't have, you know, any drops of him because, you know, we tend to go for more the flair and things like that. But I found him really a really intriguing guy, and it's hard to see him in a Patriots jersey. You normally associate really, you know, arrogance and in-your-face type attitude, sort of like what we see from Seattle now from then. I did make some notes on Lynch because I was told that I was going on the ABC to preview the Super Bowl this week and managed to talk about Deflategate for a good half an hour.
I'm not Mona Lisa Beto of the football world.
So I some stuff on Lynch I thought, and I'm going to link it back to the Baltimore Ravens. So we know the Ravens had really good success against the Patriots in the divisional playoff round. They run a simple scheme, the zone running scheme, and they were hitting them repeatedly early on in that game, and that's when they were getting up to 14 point leads. It was because they were running the ball, and the Seahawks run the exact same scheme. And look, Baltimore running back Justin Forsett had 24 carries for 129 yards against New England, and you know, 16 of those carries were zone plays where he broke tackles. So 90 yards of his was when he broke tackles. And what does something Marshawn Lynch do really well?
He breaks a lot of tackles.
That's right. And the Patriots' defense finished the regular season ranked 19th in the league, allowing an average of 1.95 yards rush yards after contact. And Lynch led the league with 771 yards after contact and an average of 2.75 yards after contact per rush. So, you know, Lynch is the best at breaking tackles, and the Patriots are very mediocre at wrapping up tackles. But I know Bill Belichick would have their team fine-tuned for that. And another interesting thing was, in the second half of games, New England's defense is ranked fifth in the league for fewest rush yards allowed in the second half and overtime. And but Marshawn Lynch led the league in rushing yards in the second half and averaged 5.13 yards per carry in the second half and overtime. So someone's going to, you know, an immovable force against an immovable object or whatever that saying is, something's got to give between those two going against each other.
I think it's immovable versus unstoppable, and yeah, that might classify as one of your March Badness ones again. I don't want to nominate you for the third time, but I'll let that one slide.
Stop it.
Yeah, no, look, if you think about Marshawn Lynch and his career, if you think back at which ones of his runs are the most famous, it's usually at the end of games.
Yeah.
It's usually the ones where Seattle's either on the cusp of winning or sort of need that score, and before you know it, there's a 50-yard run that's been broken, and Marshawn Lynch is almost just walking backwards into the end zone with a big smirk on his face, yeah, about to get a face full of Skittles. So, end of game would be very interesting, especially if it's close. I'd keep a close eye on Marshawn
Lynch. He just keeps writing new chapters in his playoff career book, and I can't wait till he walks into Canton accepting his Hall of Fame award and says,
"I'm here so I won't get fined."
You know, and just wraps up his career with just that kind of flair. And I think he could be a Super Bowl. I think he might be a Super Bowl MVP, to be honest, in this game. Another matchup is the read option quarterback against Bill Belichick's defense. They haven't played one in this year. You could say Ryan Tannehill maybe plays a bit of the read option, but nothing as good as or as efficient as Russell Wilson running the read.
Probably not. I mean, Tannehill might be the only one they've really played against that has any sort of athletic ability. Certainly not guys like Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers a little bit, but
not an injured.
Exactly. I mean, Geno Smith might actually classify as one of the only ones they've played against as well. Yeah. So, yeah, this is going to be interesting. And, you look back at all the success that Russell Wilson had this year. His ability to move out of the pocket has been the reason why he's been able to keep plays going. And, I mean, a lot of plays, including the two-point conversion in the NFC title game, wasn't so much that the play emerged the way that they wanted to. It was more the fact that the play's broken, but Russell Wilson's able to actually keep things going with his feet. And good things happen when he's able to buy some time. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the Patriots go against that, considering they really haven't had too much of a experience defending that sort of quarterback.
Yeah, and I found that the Seattle offense didn't really start going until they started running against Green Bay, until they started running that read option.
Yeah.
Once Russell started making plays with his feet, things opened up in the passing game and things just flew. And that's when Lynch started to open up as well. And I think Pete Carroll would be insane not to run the read.
They'd have to. I mean, that's their strength on offense, well, apart from the running game.
Yeah.
But if they're going to have any sort of passing game, it needs to be on the back of Russell Wilson being able to actually have time But if he doesn't have time, being able to actually keep players alive on his feet, which he's proven he can do over and over again.
Yeah, and with the Seattle's wide receivers, let's be honest, they're not the best pairing of wide receivers in the NFL. They could be, you know, one of the worst. Against this Patriots secondary where you have, you know, Devin McCourty and Darrell Revis, you're going to have to start sort of running that read to sort of draw some more coverage towards you so that you can get those receivers open.
Yeah, I mean, I know Doug Baldwin had some choice words for Deion Sanders after the game that, yeah, he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder that maybe the Seattle receivers don't get the respect they deserve. Yeah. But, I mean, ultimately, once they traded away Percy Harvin, they didn't really have much firepower there. And I mean, Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse, and I guess even Paul Richardson, even though he's done his ACL, I mean, they're serviceable guys. You look back at the Patriots teams that won Super Bowls, they didn't really have anyone to flash on.
People say, he hasn't got weapons or he hasn't... And when they're comparing greatness he did it with these receivers. But I always find that receivers probably... You don't need a game-changing receiver if you have a really good offensive line and a really good running game and a good defense. Look at the teams that have won Super Bowls, most of them since 1970, teams with the number one scoring defense that appear in the Super Bowl, 13-3.
And the number one offenses have not yet won a Super Bowl. So.
Exactly. So I don't think weapons are everything. I think if you have plenty of time to hit mediocre weapons, I'd rather be throwing balls to Jermaine Kearse if I can hold the ball for 6 seconds and trying to force a pass to Demaryius Thomas while I'm getting sacked. And that's the difference in how they played last year as well, and with those mediocre receivers. And yeah, as you said with Doug Baldwin, did you see him talk to Deion Sanders at Media Day and their office chairs in the middle of the field?
I haven't actually seen that yet, but I can imagine how it went.
It honestly...
I'm a product of pain and suffering.
It was like watching, like, you've already seen a train crash and you're driving past a train crash and planes drive straight into that train wreck and just keep flying into it. Like a thousand. It was the most awkward piece of interviewing I've ever seen in my life. And that's 6 minutes of my life that I'll never get back. It was horrific. It was terrible.
I don't want to bash the Seahawks receivers too much. I've got all the respect in the world for Kearse and Baldwin and that, but you got to consider that Le'Veon Bell, a running back, had more receiving yards than Doug Baldwin this year. Doug Baldwin was the number one receiver for the Seahawks. Travis Kelce, Jordan Matthews, Delanie Walker from Tennessee, Martellus Bennett. A rookie like Kenny Stills had more yards. Reuben Randall, who was one of the most disappointing players of the year, had more receiving yards than him. Eric Decker. So... Yeah. Well, but as you said, you don't need an all-star.
No, and I don't think Doug Baldwin cares about the statistics if he has two Super Bowl rings to show for it. I don't think he cares.
Exactly. And I mean, how many people have heard of Luke Wilson before and not thought of the actor? And yet he's a guy who's probably going to have a handful of receiving yards and maybe a touchdown or two in a Super Bowl.
I think he's the X factor in the receiving game. I think he's a talent, very underrated talent.
And then Cooper Helfort as well. You never know who's going to throw it to.
Yeah, he started to emerge as well. So the tight ends are definitely something that Russell Wilson would look for, especially if you've got Darrell Revis blanketing Doug Baldwin. I found an interesting stat, which I thought was really good. Teams are 12-0 when they bring a pick all the way back for six.
So, that probably rings true for the Seattle Seahawks this year, then, if they can get that done, because they're probably the most likely.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Who's more likely to have a pick six, the Seattle Seahawks or the New England Patriots?
I would say that it's the Seahawks, but at the same time, with some of the pressure that New England might be able to get on Wilson, before too long, those backpedaling throws that Wilson somehow manages to hit when he has time, before too long, one of them has to turn into an interception.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he threw four interceptions against Green Bay, and then that two-point conversion should have been picked off as well. But I think it's probably good that Russell threw them all then, because he will have worked so hard after that. He would be embarrassed by that.
He would be.
Arguably one of the worst 56 minutes of quarterbacking in playoff history, but manages to pull it out with 4 minutes of goodness. Or greatness, it's blurred those two lines. I think it was a lot on Lynch and an onside kick. But I think, yeah, Wilson will be a lot smarter with his throws than he was last week. And I think Justin Britt is returning at right tackle, so they might not be able to get as much pressure on him as last week. Whoever filled in for him, he was that bad. I can't remember his name.
We'll have to look it up.
That's how awful he was. His name's not worth mentioning. He was just crap.
That is correct.
Any other key battles or matchups anything you find interesting about the matchup this coming Monday or Sunday for American listeners?
Well, I'm not really sure there's any original thoughts left for the Super Bowl analysis because everyone's had 2 weeks to sort of mull it over. But
I'd say 1 week because of Deflategate.
Well, no, that's a very good point. That is a very good point.
Yep.
Look, I'm just excited to actually see the game. I mean, last year was a bit underwhelming. So really, this is the first time in 2 years that we've seen a Super Bowl, potentially could see a Super Bowl where you don't know the result within the first 5 minutes.
Mm.
And, you know, clearly both of these teams deserve to be there. They're the best teams in each of the conferences. So it'll be exciting to see these two teams actually go head-to-head, considering we haven't seen them in, 3 years?
Yeah.
There's obviously the Mad Bro thing to go off of. There's obviously Pete Carroll being the former Patriots head coach, albeit 15, 20 years ago. It's going to be great. It's ultimately the oldest or the previous dynasty versus what could probably be the current dynasty. So
that's right.
Something's got to give.
That's exactly it. And I find it interesting that both two teams start their last Super Bowl started with a safety.
I just
find that very strange. Very strange. And one last matchup we forgot to mention is LeGarrette Blount has been playing very well lately since Seattle kicked him to the curb with his bag of marijuana or whatever was causing him trouble over there. And I think this is an interesting stat that I think you might like. In the 5 Super Bowls that Brady and the Patriots have played since 2001, their 3 victories came in games where they've rushed for 100-plus yards. The Patriots have failed to surpass 83 yards, that was in their 2 losses to the New York Giants. And the Seattle defense gives up an average of 81.5 yards a game.
So, I think it'd be more interesting to see who actually plays running back for New England.
It has to be Blount. There's no way they'd throw Jonas Gray in.
It'll be more than likely be Blount, but I mean, New England's always been one of those teams where you know it's going to be Blount, but all of a sudden you do have a guy like Vereen or even Jonas Gray sort of pop up for no apparent reason. So, I mean, you put your money on Blount to obviously do a lot of the load, but and you never know what Bill Belichick is like. It's sort of like Mike Shanahan with his running backs.
Yeah.
You never know who he's actually going to go with. So.
Some Shanahanigans or whatever what the NFL likes to call that in fantasy leagues. Anyway, I got 83 yards is the number I brought up then. Over or under for LeGarrette Blount, you think?
I think he'll go under. I just think that the Seattle defense is not only good enough, but I think that the Patriots know that their ability to win on offense might be through the air.
Okay.
As you said, obviously they're going to pay a lot of attention to Gronk more than likely. I think a lot of the success with the receivers to beat Seattle is being able to beat them underneath. That's why teams like Philadelphia were able to get a few yards. When San Diego beat the Seahawks early in the year, that was purely because they were able to outrun guys like Richard Sherman underneath with Eddie Royal and those guys. So I think especially the small guys like LaFell and Amendola and Edelman can get under the skin of the Seattle defense. I think that Patriots are going to go with a bit more of a pass-happy offense. So,
okay. I actually think they'll go over because I think since Brendan Meebane has been out, the Seahawks have shown that they can be run on. Eddie Lacy ran on them quite well for 3 quarters last week. So I actually think they'll go over. I think that'll at least, maybe in the first 3 quarters, and it might open some play action for Edelman and LaFell, like you said, to sort of hit those underneath routes and really get under the skin of the Legion of Boom. I've got a couple more questions before we go with the actual predictions. Who's more important over the last, 15 years to the Patriots' success, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick? I sent this question out on Twitter today, and we've got some debate. I want to hear your thoughts before I give mine.
I'm going to go purely based on what's actually happened in real life. And we had that one season where we didn't have Brady, but we did have Belichick. And Matt Cassel was able to lead them to an 11-win season. So I mean, not discounting what Tom Brady can do, but I think you could plug most capable quarterbacks into that team with the coaching ability of Bill Belichick, and the Patriots will still be okay. Whereas I think if you were to get, say, Josh McDaniels to take over the head coaching duties, things would collapse pretty quick. So I'm going to say that Belichick's a bit more important than Brady.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And the article was started on an ESPN, and it was a great read, but the analysts I found were horribly, horribly off on that one. I agree, and that Matt Cassel season sort of brings a memory to me, and the fact that they won their Super Bowls back when they had that elite defense, and I find it funny that they're back in it again with an elite secondary finally, one of their best defenses in years, and I think it's because Belichick develops that system well, and I think when offense has been their core, sort of the core cog, they've made Super Bowls, but they haven't. Oh, what's going on there? Someone's.
We got an angry pup outside my door.
You know, obviously a Tom Brady believer in the debate.
Yeah, I think it might actually be your neighbour's dog wanting to go outside and mow the lawn.
Yeah, I just think it's Bill Belichick, and I just think he's just the master of it all. And as you said, it's a good system job. And Tom Brady's fantastic. Fantastic player, fantastic competitor, great to watch. But I just think he's landed in one of the most comfortable positions in football. Just sitting on a throne of ease or a nice big comfy lounge, and it's been great that Belichick has that sort of control, whereas most coaches rely on their players a little bit more, whereas Belichick, just it's all him. Last question before our predictions. If Brady does win his fourth ring, where does that rank him all time, in your opinion? This is all opinion, and these debates are always... There's always sort of four or five guys between everyone, and it's just everyone's personal, what they weigh rings, how much they weigh rings over things like, or common eye tests and things like that.
Look, I think the ring debate's always going to divide people, as you said. Yeah. I don't put a massive amount of weight on it because that would discount guys like Dan Fouts and Jim Kelly and especially Dan Marino.
Yep.
But at the same time, winning rings is what matters in this league.
Yeah.
If you can win four, that's obviously going to put you in the top echelon because it not only shows that you can be successful, but it shows that you're actually a championship quarterback.
Yeah.
Not to say that the guys who didn't win them aren't championship quarterbacks, but it's obviously going to speak a lot louder than just other stats like passing yards can do. So, yeah, I wouldn't put him as high. I'll always say Joe Montana was the best.
Yeah.
And I think Joe Montana's the best, not only because he had the rings, but even without the rings, I just thought he was such a good quarterback with his play. So he's sort of like that happy medium. But yeah, Tom Brady would be top five all time if he was to capture his fourth.
Yeah, and I think this ring would be a bit more important because people forget in his first ring, like that whole postseason, he didn't throw too many passes and he actually sat out a game as well. And
he got injured in the AFC title game.
That's right. Yeah. And it sort of was a little bit, you know, like he played well, but he was only a minor element. Whereas now they have this elite defense, but I think he plays a bigger role. Like he's not just this up and coming quarterback now. He is, you know, a legend. So I think this ring has a bit more weight on it compared to the first three. And there's always going to be that sort of air from the gates that have happened as well. So to win this might sort of just stomp out sort of that hesitation. And I think he deserves to be mentioned in the top echelon, as you said. All right, let's predict it. Let's get a score from you. Who's winning?
Well, I'm going to go just with the regulation score. I do this every year, and I'm always wrong. But eventually I'm going to be right. I'm going to say it's going to be tied after regulation. We're going to go to overtime.
Oh, my God. One for the ages.
And, I mean, I don't think that... The way that the Seahawks have played this year, and especially the way that they won the NFC Championship game, I'm not one of those big believers in astrology and the universe unfolding in strange ways, but there's something just uncanny about this season for the Seahawks. It just seems to point towards them winning it. So I think they're going to win it in overtime by a field goal. I'll say the final score will be 33-30.
All right. So you're actually believing Russell Wilson in that God is making them win. Hey, God's the reason that game unfolded and that helmet hit the ball hit the helmet of Brendan Bostick. And
now, I mean, if you have a look back at a lot of Super Bowl champions. I mean, you look at the when New Orleans won. Obviously, you had the storyline of New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina, but that onside kick after halftime.
Yeah.
Every good team needs a bit of luck. The Giants had the Tyree catch.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah, I think the Ravens had the power going out. I don't know if that was luck in their favour, but every good team needs to get lucky every now and then. But when the chips are down.
Yeah.
I reckon it's going to be an all-team effort. I think that they're going to score on offense and defense. I don't think that the Seattle offense will be able to put up 30 points by themselves.
Yeah.
I think there might be a score or two from the special teams and defense. But, yeah, I reckon they're good enough to sneak over the line. Yeah. It's got a weird feeling this year.
Yeah,
it's been a crazy year.
It's been just a ridiculously bizarre season. It's just, it's one of those things, and I think you're right, and I laughed about that God thing and then about Russell Wilson and all that, and it's a little bit funny, but when you say all that sort of stuff, you know, who knows, you know? It's definitely sort of smells a bit like fate, and it was sort of like last year, they were the team of destiny, and to whop the Broncos 43-8, especially that was the most prolific offense in NFL history. They just wiped the floor with them. Look, I said on the ABC 2 weeks ago that you need to score more than 20 points to beat Seattle. And I think New England will do that, but I think Russell Wilson will just get home. I'm going to go with 24-21 Seattle.
Yeah, that 20-point thing is, I think we had a chat about that as well the other week. You might have even stolen that point from me. I don't really know. I don't really care. It's a good point.
No. I researched that one myself. Stop trying to claim my credit, buddy.
No, but that is a good point. Yeah, you have a look at the Seahawks this year. They don't necessarily win with massive scores.
No, yeah.
30s every now and then. But I think there was two or three weeks in a row where they only scored about 19 points.
Yeah, that's the part that you were telling me. The thing I said on ABC was that in Russell Wilson's postseason career, he's never had the one time he's had to score more than 20 points, he's lost.
Yeah.
And that was to the Falcons, but now that's sort of been a little bit skewed because of the overtime, and so it was 28-22 now. So we changed that number from 18-23. But what you showed me the other day in terms of how many points they've scored, it is quite low. And when you think about how many points, you know, the Patriots are able to put up against decent teams, you think maybe this could be a blowout the other way.
Let's hope not, because you obviously won a good game after last year, as I said. So
yeah. Exactly.
I mean, if it can be high scoring, then fantastic. But as long as it's close, I think we'll all be happy. We want an entertaining Super Bowl.
Yep.
Stay golden, pony boy.
That's all you want. All right. First touchdown scorer. Just throw it out there for the punters at home. If by the way, you want to have a punt on the game, we are an affiliate of TopBetter.com now. So if you log in today and sign up, use the promo code WOOTNY. You'll find it on there. It's after you sign up, you've got to go to a different thing to enter your details in and then type the Woot and Why. And then if you log out and log back in, you'll have a free $10 bet. And they have a money-back special on the Super Bowl. So with your free $10 bet, you could put it on the first touchdown score and maybe take one of Scott or my tips.
You very well could do that. Well, I'll actually look up and see what the odds are now. But
yep.
I reckon my pick for that one, where we got first touchdown scorer. My idea was to get behind Gronk on that one. He's paying $7, so it looks like he's one of the early favourites.
Yeah, not a bad one. By the way,
Gronk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Gronk's he's a good safe choice.
Yeah, that's a good choice. By the way, that promo code is Woot and Y, all in caps, and it's not the N symbol. It's AND. I'm going to go with Luke Wilson to score the first touchdown. And how much is he paying, Scott?
$17.
$17, there you go. So throw a tenner on that. There's 170 quackaroonies. Is that another March Madness?
No, I think you can say quackaroonies.
Did I stutter?
All right, so that's our first touchdown scorer picks and our actual predictions for the game. Let's go with MVP candidates, your tip, and maybe an outside chance, an outside player. Well, no one really tipped Malcolm Smith last year.
No, definitely not. I mean, the MVP usually goes to the winning quarterback, or at least the winning team. So since I've got the Seattle Seahawks winning, I'm going to go with Russell Wilson to win it. But I think on an outside chance, we'll go over on the defense, and I might give some love to Michael Bennett.
Yeah, I like those two predictions. I'm going to go a little bit different, but those two would not surprise me. I'm going to go with Marshawn Lynch to win the MVP. I just think he's just going to build to this Hall of Fame legacy, and I really want him to get into the Hall of Fame. I think it would be fantastic. Maybe he's like plaque of his head could be made out of Skittles or something.
Potentially. I mean, they could always have his bust be that really awkward player profile they've got on NFL.com. If you don't know what we're talking about, go to Marshawn Lynch's page on NFL.com, and he's looking off into the distance with some sort of almost like stoned look on his face. If that's not his Hall of Fame bust, I'll be disappointed.
It's showtime.
Yeah, and my outside chance from my pick of a stone-faced Marshawn Lynch, I'm going to go with... this is tough. It's I had a defensive player in mind. Arty said Michael Bennett, and now I've completely gone blank on who that would be. Ah, yes, I'm going to go with Bobby Wagner.
Good choice.
Yeah, I think he is one of the best linebackers in the NFL and still so underrated as a player. I know our friend and, a real Seahawks fan, Jared Watkin, raves about Bobby Wagner constantly.
Yeah, he was one of the Defensive Player of the Year candidates for us as well.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So Jared's Bobby for Bobby. Oh, so March Madness?
Almost.
Almost.
You're pushing it.
Oh, thank God. I escaped that one. All right, that's our MVP candidates and our outside chance. Now for the big stuff. It's getting juicy, baby. It's the halftime show. Katy Perry. I don't have a Katy Perry drop, but this might work. What colour dress will Katy Perry wear?
I reckon it's going to be some sort of maybe electric pink.
Electric pink?
We might as well go big on this one. Let's not go conservative. Electric pink.
Okay. All right. Electric pink. I'm going to go with an electric blue.
Ooh, that's very electric picking right
now. We're getting we're getting...
And I look around and I think we got a spicy.
Spicy. We're spicy. And... this is a little bit, MA15 plus, so if you're under the age of 12, don't listen. Will we see nipple?
I'm going to go with yes, but from male backup dancers, not from Katy Perry herself.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
That's a bold strategy, but I like it. I don't think there'll be any nipple gate from Katy Perry. And what song do you think she'll open with?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Testing Katy Perry iTunes trivia here.
Wow, I might have to go into her catalogue, but maybe we could open with maybe Raw. I reckon she'll really hit her big guns and go with Raw early.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I like that. I don't know any other I love Taylor Swift so much that she's in my head. I don't know any other Katy Perry songs. I can hear you typing away. I know I Kissed a Girl is one, but I can't see her opening with that. Is there some California Girls or something?
That's her. She's also got Firework.
There you go, Firework. She'll start with Firework.
This Is How We Do, Last Friday Night.
No.
Let's just wait and see on that one. I don't think we're going to lose too much sleep wondering about that question.
Yeah, I think so. And last but not least, where are you watching the Super Bowl, buddy?
I'll actually be pulling a different strategy. I'll be at work all day on Monday, so I'm going to be watching the replay with the lady friend after the game's finished. So I'll be avoiding all of Twitter and all of the internet to watch the game with her without trying to know what the result is. So it'll be interesting. But otherwise, ordinarily, I would be down, and this is a cheap plug, I would normally spend my time at the Sporting Globe, which is a group of sports bars here in Melbourne, most notably in Richmond. So if you're down in Melbourne for Super Bowl, head down to the Sporting Globe on Bridge Road. I know Ed Wyatt and Nathan Chapman of Pro Kick fame will be down there, so feel free to swing down there.
Ollie Noonan be down at the Sporting Globe?
Ollie Noonan will definitely be down there. So,
there you go. That's a good Colts fan right there, that Ollie Noonan.
There's no such thing as a Colts fan.
No, they exist in Australia. There's currently two of us, just me and Ollie. Although Corey McInerney from a rival podcast called himself on Twitter the most famous Colts fan in Australia.
There's also our good friend, or my good friend from Twitter, model sports fan, Haley, who's over in Canada. She's also a Colts fan. So
God bless her heart. God bless her heart. But she doesn't label herself the most famous. So.
She does not. Corey McKernan needs to pull his head in.
Yeah, that was, you know. Just stop it. And, well, food and drink. Obviously, watching the Super Bowl, me and Woot discussed this last year, and it was while eating lunch, so it was fantastic. You know, it got us really pumped up for a big feed. You obviously got your hot wings, your hot dogs, your beer. Question for you, Bud, Miller's, or Coors?
I usually go with a bit of a Sam Adams,
oh,
which is a Boston lager. So, especially given that the Patriots play, maybe jump down to your local bottler and grab some Sam Adams Boston lager. But ordinarily, I'm more of a Coors man than anything.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm more of a Coors man, but there you go. I didn't know that the Boston beer, there you go. A bit of knowledge from Scott today, because the rest has been a bit average, to be honest.
Oh, it's been dribble, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's just been just crap. All right, that's pretty much our Super Bowl preview. So we've pretty much covered everything, unless we've missed anything.
I don't think so. I think Mark Sanchez might have some words about chicken fingers, but if you don't have that sound drop, that's okay.
Oh, my God, you gave it to me and I forgot it.
It was a good sound drop, too. If you don't know, the chicken fingers at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia are good. You need to try them.
There you go. So if that's what you want to do this weekend, is maybe head over to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Just one afternoon. Grab yourself some chicken fingers with Mark Sanchez. Look, I'm really sorry. That was a great drop, but I was listening to Taylor Swift YouTube videos trying to find some sound drops from her, and I wasted my whole night.
You dropped the ball.
No, I didn't. I had a great time. It was watching acoustic sets and secret shows. She even did a cameo with J-Lo. You know, she's still Jenny from the Block. Fantastic stuff. Some promos before we finish up, because, you know, we love to shamelessly self-plug here. As I said, top better, get on it. Woot and Why is the promo code, so get a free $10 bet. It's nothing to lose, and we'll be using them for our tournaments next year. Are you going to go in it, Scott?
Definitely.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. If we can get, the more that we can get in these tournaments, the better it'll be. There, it's picking. It's a pick'ems tournament. More details will be out after the season's finished. We're going to get on the front foot and get that organized. And remember, they have a money-back special, so if you bet on a team to win and they lose by less than a touchdown, less than 6 points, you get your money back. So we've both predicted close wins, so you know I think that's a worthy investment. Also, check us out on Over the Line Sports. They're working overdrive at the moment as the NRL kicks off, so they've entrusted us to sort of cover the Super Bowl for them. So we're in charge in the off-season of their NFL content in terms of audio. Our good friend and fan Robert Shembury has just been appointed NFL editor, so NFL content on there is gonna get a lot better over there, and a good Australian website. Don't forget, if you're in Sydney, go to the King Street Brewhouse, the Super Bowl party. You can buy me a Coors, as I've just said, that's my favourite. So buy me a Coors, and please, I don't want to be the only entry in March Badness. With all the stuff I've been saying the last 2 weeks, so. Otherwise, Scott's going to win the prize, and to be honest, he doesn't deserve the prize because he's done nothing. He's just been bloke, and he's just, you know, whatever. So let us know. Thanks to Neil Dutton, he sent us Heath Evans talking about how Deflategate is creationism.
Definitely a different angle.
Oh, he is the worst. That's a smoky to win the whole thing. Anyway, that's the show. Just kicking on to an hour now. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at JYNFL. You can follow Scott on Twitter at
Sportrepreneur.
Yes.
But if you can't spell it, you can always just look up the Woot and Why Twitter account and you'll see my name.
Yeah.
Plastered over there.
Yeah, we'll give you some more followers on there. And I'll Scott L as well. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and please rate us on iTunes, more the better. And look us up on Facebook, and good luck to Seattle, I guess, because we both tipped them. And if I see you on Monday, say hello.